Our today's topic is using MQTT for connections of mobile applications to IBM sites in enterprise messaging systems. Today's speaker is Valerie Lapkin. Valerie has over 14 years of experience with IBM supporting WebSphere MQ. Previously, she has been part of the IBM Global Services and is now with the Software Group MQ Level 2 team. She's a regular contributor to the WebSphere and IBM CICS support blog on DeveloperWorks. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Valerie.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. Yes, as Kathy said, the website was down today, so we're going to reschedule for probably hopefully the 23rd or 24th, but since some people had already joined, we're going to go ahead and do it today and basically do it twice so that those of you who have joined can get the information today. So we're going to be talking about using MQTT to connect mobile applications to IBM message site and enterprise messaging systems. Let's go on to the next slide. Slide 2. This is our agenda. We're going to talk about the proliferation of mobile devices that has created what's known as the Internet of Things. We're going to discuss the MQTT protocol, which is MQ Telemetry Transport. That's a low bandwidth protocol that utilizes PubSub architecture and has various qualities of service for delivery. The WebSphere MQ Telemetry, which allows an extended reach of your queue manager to the telemetry clients. Also, the message site appliance, which can handle big data coming from millions of remote connected devices. And how to connect mobile applications to the IBM message site and WebSphere MQ using MQTT. We'll go through some examples of mobile user experiences with MQTT and message site and discuss how to connect message site to a queue manager, and also how to connect the mobile applications to message site, which can then access your backend enterprise and give you a full topology of messaging. Let's go to the next slide, slide 3. So the Internet of Things is basically a term that's been coined to describe the billions of smart devices that instrument the world today and interconnect many different global devices to create what is known as a central nervous system of technology. And the intelligent devices that people have is really changing the way we interact. We live in a technology-enabled world that's more interconnected than ever before. I've heard that there are 9 billion devices currently connected to the Internet, and they estimate that to increase to 50 billion devices in the next decade. So the Internet of Things drives big data volumes, and this creates a need for a system that can process the big data and provide real-time analysis and response. Basically, if you think about the big data information chain, we start with the small mobile devices that are the Internet of Things, and these devices connect to each other. The data is captured, and customers want real-time awareness, so it must be analyzed and predictions made. Then an organization can act to optimize and anticipate future events. Let's go on to the next slide, which is slide 4. I'm going to discuss the MQTT protocol. So MQTT means MQ Telemetry Transport, and it's a simple pub-sub lightweight messaging protocol. MQTT origins go back nearly 2 decades. Co-inventor was Andy Stanford Clark, who is a distinguished engineer at IBM, and he was working with his industry partner, Arlen Nipper, who was an American engineer and an expert in the embedded systems for oil field equipment. And together, they wrote the initial version of MQTT in 1998. They kept improving this open-source messenger software over the years. So it's an open-source royalty-free protocol, and it allows easy adaptation for a wide variety of devices. It's ideal for constrained environments where the network bandwidth is low and when the remote devices may have limited processing capability, because that basically is how it was built to process in those types of situations in the field. MQTT is in the progress now to become an OASIS standard for machine-to-machine communication. The Eclipse Pajo project was a collaboration between IBM Eurotech and the other entities to provide open source tools and protocols for machine-to-machine solutions. And now, last year in 2013, an OASIS technical committee was formed to help produce a standard for MQTT and requirements for enhancements, document the usage examples, and best practices. So I've included some links here for those different organizations. You can get a lot of information from about at the MQTT.org website. Let's go to the next slide, number five. So today, a lot of businesses have been using HTTP-based communication. I'd like to give a comparison between the MQTT protocol and HTTP. They both are based on TCP/IP, but the HTTP uses a request-response, a one-to-one type scenario, whereas MQTT uses the pub-sub pattern. So it may be one-to-one or it may be one-to-many. HTTP is document-centric, whereas MQTT is data-centric. So the HTTP is more complex. MQTT is a very simple protocol. The message size is smaller. It's only a two-byte header. MQTT offers three qualities of service settings, and with HTTP, all messages get the same level of service. MQTT protocols features make it an ideal participant for IBM's mobile first strategy. So let's go to the next slide, slide six. And we'll discuss some of the features of MQTT protocol. As I said, it's a pub-sub messaging model. So it facilitates one-to-many distributions. Sending applications or devices don't need to know anything about the receiver. They don't even know the address. They're just going to publish it, and then whoever wants is going to subscribe. So this makes this is ideal for constrained networks where you might have low bandwidth, high latency, limits for data, or fragile connections. The MQTT message headers are being very small at only 2 bytes. Keeps this at low network usage, and it also has a push-style messaging distribution to help keep the network utilization low. There are multiple service levels to allow flexibility in handling the different types of messages. The developer can decide if the messages need to be delivered at most once, at least once, or exactly once, and we'll talk about that more when we get into the quality of service. Let's go to the next slide, number seven. The MQTT protocol, as I said, was designed specifically for the remote devices with little memory or processing power. So therefore, there's a very small client footprint, and there's limited reliance on libraries. So it's really good for the small, constrained devices that proliferate out in the world today. It's easy to use and implement. Many applications only have to just connect, publish, subscribe, and disconnect. That's really all that is required of the application. There's built-in support for a loss of contact between the client and the server. You can set it up so that the server is informed if a client connection breaks. As I said, these might often be out in the field situations and not have good network stability, and there may be some situations when you need to know if a client has dropped off. Let's go to the next slide, number eight. This is just a diagram that shows the MQTT message format and that it really only has a requirement of a 2-byte fixed-length header. The other fields are all optional, so that makes it such that you can decide how you want to configure messages if you need to get more information. Otherwise, you could just have the 2-byte header and then your message payload. Okay, next slide, number nine. And here I just wanted to talk about some different examples where MQTT might be implemented. It can be used by many industries. One thing that's not really on here, but one well-known usage case is Facebook used MQTT for the live notifications it sends to the users for their messaging. It was determined that previously what they were using was not fast enough, and once they implemented using MQTT for their Facebook Messenger, that really helped speed up their connectivity and with all these millions of customers that they had connected at one time, and it could do push notifications out. So some examples we have here where MQTT can be used for energy monitoring. You can have sensors out in all the different locations that are monitoring the energy usage and reporting that back to the plant so that they can do grid comparisons of where the energy consumption is across the grid and at what different times of days, examples for that. For healthcare, one thing MQTT can be very beneficial is it can be used through monitoring a patient's health, and this can help either make it more reliable for when a patient may need to see the doctor and when they may not. If you're doing a routine monitoring and everything is going fine, the doctor's getting the updates, and you don't have any irregularities, then you may not need to go in for an appointment, and you may spread out the, you know, your regular visits with your primary care physician. Whereas if the doctor were to get a notification that there is something irregular, then they can notify the patient that, hey, you need to come in so we can check this out. The smart banking would be very useful in fraud detection or sending someone alerts. For example, if you wanted to know your bank balance, or you could set a public a subscription so that it's going to notify you if you go below a certain balance or if something's utilized not the way you want it, rather than you having to constantly pull and ask for that information, like, hey, what's my balance? Did my balance go up or down? You could just set a subscription so that you would automatically get a push notification out to your mobile phone whenever something happened that met the criteria that you had subscribed for. Okay, let's go to the next slide, slide 10. Okay, so let's discuss some of the concepts of MQTT. If you're familiar with What's for MQ, you probably know what PubSub is. And the MQTT protocol is based on the principle of publishing messages and subscribing to topics. Clients can subscribe to topics that pertain to them and receive whatever messages are published. Or, conversely, a client can publish a message to a topic and make it available to all subscribers. Next slide, 11. So when the messages are published to a topic, those topics can be thought of as subject areas, and the clients would sign up to receive particular messages. Subscriptions can be explicit, which limit the messages received to the specific topic at hand. They can use wildcards. And for example, let's say I want to subscribe to a topic about getting baseball scores. Maybe I want to get all the baseball scores, or maybe I just want to get scores for the Braves. So that's how you could limit the type of subscription that you're getting. But the publisher would publish everything. You would limit, in that case, based on the subscription of what particular topic you wanted and how granular you wanted it to be. Retained messages are something that with MQTT, the server will keep a message even after it's sent it out to all the current subscribers. So if a new subscription comes in, then the retained messages would be sent to the new subscriber. So let's say all the baseball scores have been published last night, but I was not a subscriber, so I didn't get it. But I wanted to go this morning and subscribe. If it was a retained message, I would get the score that had already been saved from last night. Okay, next slide, number 12. The MQTT also has a feature called Clean Sessions and Durable Connections. And when a client connects to the server, it can set the clean session flag. If it's true, then all the client subscriptions are removed when it disconnects. If it's set to false, then the connection is treated as durable, and the client subscriptions remain in effect after it disconnects. In this case, the subsequent messages that arrive have a high quality of service, and they're stored once the connection is reestablished. So, again, going back to the baseball scores, if I was not connected, but I had a durable subscription, and then if I connected later, it would still give me the score that had been saved for me. Okay? Next slide, number 13. The last one I'll touch on is what can be used to let you know when a client has disconnected abnormally. So when a client connects to a server, it can inform the server that it has a will. This is a message that should be published to a specific topic in the event that it unexpectedly disconnects. This is useful in a scenario where you might have alarms, security settings, or sensors in the field that you need to know if those have dropped off and that you're not getting the readings or the information that you need. Then you would receive this last will and testament and say, hey, this sensor out in this particular area has failed, and you could go investigate if it didn't come back online. Now, quality of services, MQTT defines three qualities of service levels for message delivery, and we're going to go into that in the detail on the next slide, number 14. Okay, so the quality of service zero is at most once, and the messages are delivered according to the best efforts of the network. You can have message loss or duplication, and a response is not expected. And there's no retry. But basically, this is almost like a datagram. I've got this info. I'm sending it out. Hope you're there. Hope you get it. Then you have the quality of service one, which means at least once, where the message is assured to be delivered, but you might get a duplicate. And a quality of service two means exactly once, where the message is assured to arrive exactly once. So in that case, you actually are getting an acknowledgement or receipt back that your client got the message. Of course, there is a performance impact in the terms of the network traffic and processing the higher you go for the quality of service. If you are just sending out a quality of service zero, it's a much lower performance impact than if you're trying to get the exactly once acknowledgement. Okay, next slide, number 15. Okay, so what we've been talking about so far is MQTT, which is a protocol, a free open source protocol that can be used. And now we're going to switch a little bit and talk specifically about IBM WebSphere MQ telemetry. This is a little different in that this is really talking about the telemetry feature of WebSphere MQ. So MQ telemetry was added as an installable feature with 701. It could be installed as a support pack that was supported by the Level 2 and Level 3 teams, but now it is also fully integrated as part of the WebSphere MQ version 7.1 and 7.5, so when you get that software, it is integrated and you don't have to download it separately. You can install it when you install your WebSphere MQ. The MQ telemetry is a feature of MQ that extends it using the MQTT protocol to allow it to interact with a wide range of remote sensors, actuators, and telemetry devices. It allows instrumented devices from anywhere to connect to each other and to the enterprise applications, web services, and WebSphere MQ. Let's go to the next slide, number 16. So the reason I've mentioned here the extended reach, originally when it was developed to allow your queue manager to have an extended reach to the remote devices, sometimes still when you start the service or processes, they're running under something called MQXR, which really means the MQ telemetry feature. It's a TCP/IP listener that's part of the queue manager. And the telemetry clients are the remote devices and applications that are using the protocol that we discussed previously to send and receive messages with the queue manager. And then once the messages come into the queue manager, those can be exchanged with other messaging applications. They can be sent to other telemetry applications with MQ APIs, GMS, or enterprise messaging applications such as your WAS application server or the message broker, which is now called IIB, IBM Integration Bus with version 9. Next slide, number 17. Okay, so to continue with their plan for extended reach of the WebSphere products, last year IBM announced the IBM Message Site. It's an appliance-based MQTT server that can connect a massive number of MQTT clients at the same time. And it delivers performance and scalability to accommodate the growing number of devices in the world. It supports the MQTT version 3.1 protocol and MQTT over WebSockets. It's easy to deploy. There's even a YouTube video that shows it from being unpackaged from the box up and running in 30 minutes. So basically, this is going to allow you to have a million of those MQTT clients connected at one time. Let's go to the next slide, number 18. Okay, so message site is a low latency, reliable, scalable messaging server, and it was designed specifically for this machine-to-machine and mobile scenarios. What we're showing in the slide here is where it would fit in your enterprise. So it's a DMZ-ready appliance that can provide security and easy deployment. As you see here, you have all the remote sensors of the Internet of Things coming in wirelessly. They can use the MQTT protocol to connect to this message site appliance and then be funneled to your back end where you have your other messaging applications. This enables you to have event-driven and near real-time communication from your existing enterprise to all the remote devices that can be connected. Let's go to the next slide, number 19. So some features of IBM Message Site you can have high availability, you can have a pair of appliances connected for a hot warm setup. These do have to currently be in the same location because they're connected via cable. It's not a DR, it's really more of a high availability in the same location. It's developer-friendly. They have simple yet powerful APIs. As I said before, you're just going to do, you can just connect, subscribe, publish, disconnect. It's optimized for wireless. It uses the MQTT protocol to provide efficient two-way messaging that allows the constrained devices with the low bandwidth to communicate and connect to the message site appliance and then to your back end. So let's go to the next slide, number 20. So message site is easy to integrate. It can integrate with WAS application server using a Java connector architecture. It has a built-in connectivity with WebSRMQ, which we're going to show how to set that up later. Also, the IIB, which was formerly Broker, now allows, version 9 allows support through the JMS nodes. And another IBM product we're going to discuss just briefly through this presentation is InfoSphere Streams that can consume data from message site. It can actually analyze the data on almost real time and provide some predictive analysis. Message site also provides security. You can have a TLS SSL security. There's authentication by a user ID, a password, or by certificate. And it also has it's easy to configure security profiles. Each endpoint, which is a port, can be configured with different security options. Next slide, number 20. So message site is easy to administer. It can be up and running very quickly, and there's a web user interface that allows you to configure the different features, endpoints, et cetera, that we'll go into a little bit. You can also do monitoring via the web user interface. As I said before, the massive scalability is really the one feature that's impressive with message site. One appliance can handle more than 1 million concurrent connections. Now, when it originally came out, it was version 1.1, but 1.0, but now version 1.1, which was released around Thanksgiving, offers shared subscriptions, which allow applications to share and balance the workload across multiple processes. For example, the workload can be split across multiple instances of the integration bus. You can imagine if you're having 1 million devices connected, all sending messages at the same time, and you route that back to one queue manager or one broker, it might be overloaded. So now you can have the shared subscriptions, which you can have multiple queue managers or multiple brokers on the back end handling that large inflow of data. Let's go to the next slide, number 22. And this is just the overall topology to kind of show you how message site is goes into the scheme of things. As you see there in the middle is the IBM message site. We also show the standby if you do have a high availability set up. But what you're going to have on the left here is the Internet, where you're going to have all your remote devices. Mobile devices are going to be connecting either over MQTT or WebSockets. You might also have sensor devices out in the field, or you might have a JMS server that connects into the message site. Those messages then can either be routed to your back end with the MQ connectivity to the Q queue managers that you have. It can use MQTT to communicate with other applications. It can use the JMS or the resource adapter to communicate with Java applications. And then here on the bottom right-hand side, you see where the system administrator is able to administer that through the browser and the web GUI. Next slide, number 23. So if you go out in Google Message site, one of the first things you're probably going to find is connected cards. This is something that I think even when it was announced, you know, this is something that it was shown. Some of the features that could be done with Message site was really with the connected card. A connected car can somewhat be considered a rolling sensor or actuator because it is constantly collecting data for reporting, and it has the potential to intelligently act upon the data. So let's say, you know, if your car is having some vibrations detected, or it can take that information and send it up to the automobile manufacturer. They could then notify you that you need to come in for appointment. Rather than just having your check engine light on, it could give more detailed information to the service center before you even come in to bring it in to see what needs to be looked at. And it could even schedule the appointment with the car owner. The other thing you could have is a smartphone app that would allow you to find your car. You know, it could be sensors in the car. It could be getting a GPS, geospatial reading, and help you find your car. You could also unlock your car. And there's a demo, I think it might be the demo that I gave the link in to here, actually shows, like, you know, if you're saying that your car is parked in a certain situation and you're gone for a while and it's not locked or the lights are on, it could send you a note, a little pop-up message saying, oh, you left your lights on, it's not locked, do you want me to lock them? And then you just push the button and, yes, it does it automatically for you. So you don't run back out to the parking lot and say, oh, did I forget to lock the car? Or it doesn't just say you didn't lock your car, it actually gives you the option to lock it remotely. Next slide, I believe is number 24. And this is just a slide I included that kind of shows a whole comprehensive topology of how the MQTT here on the far left, you'll see with the tablets, sensors, devices, would interact, and then you have other information coming in through the internet. You have your edge gateway where you're going to have message site sitting and going to a back end of MQ and your data center. You can also interact with the cloud here and also then push this information out with some other IBM products such as file transfer. So you can get information gathered from a large variety of remote devices, funnel it all down, distill that information, and make predictive analysis, either pushing it back out or sending it to your other business partners. Let's go to the next slide. I believe this is number 25. Again, we're just showing connecting message site to the enterprise system. You can configure the message site appliance to link with the new or existing queue managers using the MQ connectivity feature, and this feature can be used from MQ version 7.1 onward. Now, just to clarify here, I said with the MQTT protocol, that was available in 7.01, but if you're going to be connecting the message site with the connectivity feature, you're going to need 7.1. So let's go to the next slide, number 26. So now we're going to go through how you're going to connect the message site to the to your queue manager. And first of all, you have to have a Servercon channel created. You can do this with the runmqsc command, and I've just given an example here. In this particular case, just to clarify here why I'm using IMA, you know, the way I said that sometimes you'll see in legacy, or not even legacy, but new systems, when something is originally named one way, then it still keeps that. So sometimes with the message site, you'll see IMA because it was called IBM Messaging Appliance. So if you see IMA in some documentation or in some processes, that's pertaining to message site. So in this case, I've just generically named a channel IMA Servercon, and that's the one we're going to use for the example we're showing here. Okay, let's go to slide 27. And I'm just going to walk you through how you would set up the MQ connectivity from the message site appliance. This is the GUI that you would see when you start up the web browser, and after you have already created the Servercon channel, Then you're just going to log into the message site appliance with a browser. You have to know the IP address and port number, and then you can sign in through the GUI here as the administrator. Next slide. So the GUI here, just quickly, we'll walk you through. You would select the messaging tab, MQ connectivity. Let's go to the next slide. And that then is going to pop up where you're going to need to put the information. You would click on the little green sign there. That would bring up a menu. Let's go to the next slide. And that's where you would put the information. If what you want to call this Key Manager Connect connection, you can name it anything you want. You may have multiple Key Manager connections for one messaging site appliance. You would give it the Key Manager name, the connection, and the server con channel. So here we're just given the IP address of where the Key Manager is running, the Key Manager name, and the server con channel that I've already created. And the port 1414, of course, is the default port for MQ. Next slide. So once you've done that, you basically have created your connectivity from your message site to your Key Manager. Now, when you do that connection, there are going to be some internal queues that are called that are named system.ima and then have some different names on it. So what I've done here is shown that you still are going to have your normal Key Manager OEM security settings in place. So if you don't, the ID that you come in with from message site is going to need to have the security settings already set up, or you'll get an error once you set that up. And these are the different system queues that you'll need to grant those authorities to. Next slide, number 31. And if you do have any questions about MQ Security Authority, of course, the MQ Information Center has that. Now, going back to the message site GUI, once you've had the MQ connectivity established, you can create your destination mapping rules. So the way we did with the MQ connectivity, you click a little green plus, it's going to pop up your destination mapping rule, and then you would add what you want. You name it, something that would be, you know, specific to your application or your project, and then you have the option of either setting up different types of mapping. You can map topics to queues, queues to topics, and as you see, these are the different examples of types of mapping you could do. Next slide, number 33. You must also check the box associated Key Manager connection to relate the destination mapping rule with the appropriate Key Manager. And then after you've created the rule and enabled it, then the messages are routed as you've configured it. So in this case, we were in this scenario, we have mapped a message site topic to a queue. So when you get a client coming in, either publishing to that topic, it's going to take those messages and route it over to the queue that you have defined. Next slide, number 34. So what I've been showing you is kind of the GUI portion of how you would go and set these up. There are also command line tools that you can use at the console, either if you don't want to go through the GUI or after you set things up. Here's an example of how you could list all the destination mapping rules that you've set up at the command line. Type in IMA server list destination mapping rule, and it will output this to show you what type of rules you have configured so far. That may be good if you want to do a, some kind of backup or route it to a file to save. Okay, next slide, number 35. As I mentioned before, MQTT is a pub-sub architecture, and this allows many different participants to connect. Some can even be very minute RFID devices. The sensors measure the systems and report the data, but an actuator is a sensor that can actually take action. For example, the flow valve in a pipeline, it can measure the data and send it up, but if it's an actuator, it could also receive a reply back to alter the rate of flow based on certain parameters that has sensed and reported back. Now, the connected car can have a device that sends publications and also receives subscriptions. these various MQTT clients can interact with one another and be intelligent, which helps us lead to a smarter planet. There are many different MQTT open source clients available that can be downloaded. Most of these are like free clients that you can download. I've also included here a video of the MQTT key fob application, which uses PubSub to control a simulated car. Let's get to the next slide. Okay, this slide demonstrates how MessageSite utilizes both MQTT protocol and JMS. The front end and the remote mobile client uses the MQTT protocol, and then the MessageSite appliance connects with the broker back end, which is the IIB version 9, and provides JMS messaging communication. The MessageSite in the middle does the required protocol bridging between the MQTT and the JMS. Go to the next slide, number 37. I want to talk a little bit about mobile applications, and first let's talk about some factors that you should consider when you're developing mobile applications. One thing that's important is the battery life. The application should consume the least resources possible so the battery life is preserved. Also, processing capacity is important. The application should be simple in terms of processing so that it speeds the response time. Mobile devices should have network connectivity options to optimize the network. Applications should be able to switch between available communication options seamlessly. For example, if you're doing an application in your house using your Wi-Fi and then you go out to the car and leave, and then it automatically your mobile phone switches to a 3G, 4G, you would like for that application to be able to continue doing what it was doing at the time you're on the Wi-Fi. And then the platform capabilities should be considered. There may be requirements to build an application. It can vary from one platform to another. Usually the platform owner provides a set of APIs, but with MQTT, then you have freely available implementations of the protocol. This allows the developers to concentrate on the application functionality and use the MQTT protocol as a service. Okay, let's go to the next slide, number 38. So there are different approaches for developing mobile applications. You know, you may have a web app that uses a mobile browser. You know, new devices use a mobile browser to deliver a mobile look and feel. This can be used on many different devices, but it cannot access a mobile device feature such as a camera or contact list because you really are using a browser for that function. Also, there may be a hybrid app, which is a mix of the web, but it uses the web source code of the application, consists of web code run within a native container, and there may be mixed developer augments the web code with the native language to create a unique features and access the native APIs. And then last option would be the native apps. And this is where you write your application using the programming language and the interface for a specific operating system or device. This might be the best performance, but it can be costly for developers for each different version of the mobile device operating system. Okay, next slide. So IBM provides a product to help with mobile application development, and this is called WorkLite. It consists of five core components. Each component provides a specific set of functions and supports a different stage in the life cycle of the mobile application. There's WorkLite Studio. This is an Eclipse-based development environment. It has a rich set of tools for developing cross-platform applications. There's WorkLite Device Runtime, which is an environment with consistent APIs that can work across different mobile platforms to access native device functionality and integrate it with existing services and security. There's WorkLite Server, which is a runtime server that enables secure access to the enterprise services. Application version management unifies push notifications and direct application updates. There's WorkLite Console, which is a web-based user interface for real-time analytic push notification authoring and mobile application version management. And finally, there's the WorkLite Application Center, which is a private cross cross-platform mobile application store. This is tailored for the specific needs of an application development team. So IBM has put quite a bit of focus on WorkLite. They have even made updates so that it could support Apple version 7 operating system on the day that that version was announced. Let's go to the next slide, number 40. Okay, so IBM WorkLite leverages open standards such as HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and solutions such as Apache, Cordova, Eclipse Foundation, and the Android and Apple SDKs. This provides flexibility for implementing mobile applications. The WorkLite API uses Apache open source Cordova project, which may also be known as PhoneGap. This helps to bridge the JavaScript to the native Java code that's required to interface with Android platforms and device hardware. The Work Client API lets the mobile application JavaScript use the Android platform-specific user interface controls, and that allows it to access the device hardware. The application itself can be developed in HTML and JavaScript, and then the Apache Cordova PhoneGap libraries provided with WorkLite are used to interface with the native code that implements the MQTT protocol. So Apache Cordova and WorkLite together allow the developers to access native mobile device features and execute native code using the JavaScript. And this native code includes the Android service that manages communications with MQTT when the application itself is not running in the foreground. Let's go to the next slide, number 41. So this slide just illustrates the architecture of mobile applications developed as an IBM WorkLite hybrid application. The user interface and application logic is coded in HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. Next slide, number 42. IBM WorkLite Studio offers a mobile browser simulator to test applications using your desktop browser. So this can be quite helpful. It saves time because the application doesn't have to be repeatedly deployed to a device during your testing and development stages. You can make the changes, use a simulator to test how it would look and appear on an actual mobile device, but just using the WorkLite Studio browser. Next slide, number 43. So if you're interested in playing around with the IBM mobile messaging and machine-to-machine client pack, there is a MA9B that provides the SDK for building these MQTT-based mobile applications. You can download this at the link provided. The SDK contains client libraries and samples that you can use. And there's a developer works article that walks through using MQTT SDK to create an Android application. Next slide, number 44. Okay, so let's just talk about, what was it like 5 years ago? People had phones, but they only talked to basically other phones, and it only did that when you ask it to. Now, today, phones can connect to almost anything, and it can share and receive the information automatically. So we need to look forward to the future. What is there something new that's coming out besides phones? Who is it going to talk to? There are endless possibilities. If we are able to analyze the data in real time, we can use this for fraud and risk detection, optimize traffic flow, or security threats can be detected in a timely manner. You can send, retailers can send location-based offers or services to people on their mobile devices. And retailers can also predict and act on a customer's intent to purchase. And we'll talk about that in some of the future examples I'm going to show. Let's go to slide 45. Okay, so here's one example of how recently IBM used the message site appliance and MQTT. It was used in the Australian Open to provide the live Grand Slam tennis scores. It could provide the real-time scores to over 30,000 concurrent clients connected. With their mobile devices, they would instantaneously get an update as the scores changed. Let's go to the next slide, number 46. So smart velocity is that a communications architecture that lets smartphones, tablets, and other devices communicate through the cloud. Sprint's partnership with IBM allows the connected vehicles to communicate with other connected devices using less bandwidth and power. So basically the owner would start the application up, and then the Sprint would authenticate the user and allow them to send commands that might unlock the car, do various other functions. And so Sprint is able to provide more functionality than just a normal mobile phone as it gets into the realm of the connected car. Okay, let's get to the next slide, number 47. So the connected car can lead to a connected city. This slide shows an extension of the connected car scenario where you can have the city sensors, emergency services, and police all sending data to message sites so the reaction to accidents can be faster and other drivers could be rerouted and reduce congestion time. As the number of smartphones increases, users expect their preferences to transfer from one device to another, and your personalized settings could be transferred to the connected car. Last year, IBM announced that Sprint is using IBM Mobile First Solutions to deliver a more personalized, responsive connected car experience. Cars can be integrated with the driver's mobile devices and customized to their specific in-vehicle entertainment, security, or convenience features that they've set. So Sprint has an end-to-end mobile integration solution that is an the message site tool is enabling automakers to develop and market connected services for cars and trucks. With this technology, vehicles have the ability to monitor crash sensors, automatically place emergency calls, provide audio links between passengers, and allow customers the ability to use smart devices to do things, like I said, unlock a car, schedule maintenance appointments, find a car in a crowded parking lot. Some future things might be mobile concierge, automated temperature adjustments, preferred routing, or location tracking. So message sites allowing companies to expand into adjacent markets. For example, Sprint was traditionally a telecommunications, but now they can also incorporate in the automotive business with embedded telecommunication features. Next slide, number 48. So this shows a little bit of what could be the topology for a connected city. If a car accident is connected, the infosphere streams could determine the cars nearby, send them alerts, and the emergency notification system would also get notified through the built-in MQ connectivity. They might even dispatch a helicopter to the scene, or emergency personnel could receive notification on their tablets. A more advanced scenario would be if the stream detects two events, like if the windshield wipers come on from two different cars close together, then it would assume it's raining and send alert to other cars nearby. The PubSub model of communication allows us to have multiple consumers of the data, and we can react to the events in near real time and then incrementally add new features. Let's go to the next slide, number 49. So how might this be useful for retailers of the future? They can, as you know now, probably when you go on Amazon or anything, you seems to be tracking what you looked at, what else makes suggestions for you. Well, that can also be done, on users' mobile devices as they go to a store, what they've looked at. They can look at, retailers can tell what customers have brought up on their browsers, what area they're at the store, or if they are at home and then come to the store. This might help with retail offers being sent to the customers. It can help to seamlessly integrate their online and inline store shopping. Let's go to the next slide. So this slide, again, is just the overall topology showing the many different messaging use cases. You could do with your mobile devices. You might be able to do medical monitoring, vehicle telematics, mobile event notification. All of that from the cars could be routed up to smarter cities having traffic monitoring and control. The energy utilities could use the metering to control the energy consumption and make predictions for grid control. And then business analytics, you can make your business more agile and respond more rapidly as you collect the data. And over here on the right is the infrastructure streams I was talking about. This just is, as we have so many different devices sending the messages in at one time, then we get this big data that has to be analyzed, and that's kind of the role that the infrastructure streams can play. Let's go to the next slide, number 51. Sometimes I've been asked what's the difference, you know, in Webster MQ, message site, and data power. So that's what these next two slides really are about. The, you know, Webster MQ is the backbone for the IBM messaging, and it has a lot of capabilities with assured delivery. It can also run on ZOS platform and many different operating systems. But the telemetry feature of Webster MQ allows it now to interact with these remote devices and also with message sites. This allows it to extend beyond the enterprise boundary and connect with all these million of mobile devices at the same time. But message site will give you a reliable delivery and scale to the millions of things and sit on the edge so that you of your enterprise facing out towards the internet. Message site really complements MQ and it provides the ability to extend the reach of the messaging network beyond the enterprise. It provides consistent, predictable, low latency messaging for a large scale of mobile users and the Internet of Things, sensors, and other machine-to-machine communication. This allows message volume that exceeds what could be achieved using MQ alone. The message site appliance is focused on enabling a significantly increased number of concurrent connections with a massive message throughput. Next slide, 52. And this one, some people have asked me, because data power is also an appliance, so they want to know what's the difference between message site and data power. They are quite different, and they perform different roles. The data power can be used. It also sits in front of your applications, but it can be used as a security gateway. It can do data validation, message encryption. It's not a messaging provider. So whereas IBM Message Site is an asynchronous messaging provider, and it supports a full PubSub messaging with MQTT, WebSockets, and JMS. It doesn't really act as a security gateway. It can scale to millions of things and millions of events and can replace 1,000 web servers. Let's go to the next slide, number 53, which I think brings us almost to the end. I have provided the list here of links which I think would really be useful to anyone who's interested in learning more about MQTT, message site. I've given the Message Site Info Center, which is always a good place to start looking. Also MQ Info Center for reference. And then some a blog entry that explains really about Message Site. There is a Message Site development community that you can also go to on DeveloperWorks. MQTT.org is the primary place to go for the MQTT open source protocol and get information. There are a couple of red books that have been written about MQTT and about Message Site, which I've included here, and also the demo for the connected car. Let's go to the next slide, which is number 54. Okay, so just to summarize, we talked about the Internet of Things, which basically is just all of the different mobile devices, sensors, that continue, smart devices that continue to grow throughout the world, and there's only going, you know, exponentially, these are just going to get more and more. So as a business, you need to find ways to harness all that data and to be able to analyze it and react upon it. The MQTT protocol is something that can help with this. It's a low bandwidth protocol. that uses the PubSub architecture and has different qualities of service for delivery. The Webster MQ telemetry is the way that you can allow your queue manager to have the MQTT clients connect. There's also the message site appliance, which allows for a large scale of remote devices to be connected concurrently, and then it can, in turn, funnel that info and that message data back to the back-end Webster MQ or even to brokers, WAS, other products in your enterprise. And then we covered some different examples for usages of MQTT and message site.
Okay, at this time, there are no questions in the web conference or on the phone. Thank you very much, Valerie.
Thank you.
This concludes your conference call.